Oh, and a hash brown, please.
You made it. You have the perfect crispy exterior, and that golden brown color looks great on you. Go on, hash brown. Find your ketchup. You'll make someone very happy.
Crispy golden hash browns from McDonald's. We make breakfast. Served until 10:30 a.m.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione, and how are you?
Hey, doing good, Russ. How are you?
Real good. So the the trading deadline has come and gone, and we'll chat about that in just a minute. And right now we're in that part of the season where they're playing for real. They always play hard in the NHL,
yeah.
but they play differently.
This is it.
This last, 20-something games.
20 games to go.
The style
yeah,
changes.
It
does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, play starts to see, you start to see a little more of the, a little more desperation. I think you start to see teams tightening up to defend. You start to see, if you're used to seeing fire wagon hockey, things are going to start to grind a little bit as teams are very much going to be conscious of protecting leads. And trying to keep things. So, again, playoff-style hockey is certainly on its way. No question about that. And certainly interesting to see how things are going to be breaking down here with the wild card races and everything as we get closer and closer to the end.
No doubt. Now, we're going to talk about some of the deadline stuff. We'll break it down with our guest, Chris Peters from CBS Sports. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks for coming
Great.
On. Home.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's get into the first interesting one that I find it interesting. So the Rangers trade for Eric Staal. Some people think they gave up nothing, and I'm one that thinks they gave up too much. But getting past that, regardless of what you gave up, they're playing him less than 15 minutes a game, and he's used to playing like 19. He's not playing on the top line. He's barely shooting the puck, and he's losing a lot of faceoffs. Like, I don't understand what the reason for sort of dipping him in the pool slowly would be for Vigneault. It's not like the Rangers are the Chicago Blackhawks. Yes, they're a very good team, but this is Eric Staal. Either it's going to work out or it's not.
Yeah, well, I think in this case, he is Eric Staal, but he's not quite Eric Staal. You know what I mean? Like,
he's not.
He's probably at the stage of his career where he needs to go somewhere where he doesn't have to be the guy, where he is mm-hmm. more of a role player. I don't think he's just, he's not your I don't know that I would necessarily have him as a bottom sixer. But he's not going to be he's not going to be getting the attendees in Carolina, and maybe that'll help. I think, his production has been down and, his mm-hmm. shooting percentage and everything else has been down. Maybe, if you can deploy him better, then maybe that works. But as we've seen so far, it's a little bit on the sluggish side. And really, Alain Vigneault, in terms of guys that have been brought in trades, it's not exactly like he's utilized them the way mm-hmm. that you would expect those return for each of those guys. Like Keith Yandel and especially now Eric Staal mm-hmm. Would dictate. So clearly not he is not motivated by the general manager's decision to play guys a certain way.
Chris, I know a team near and dear to your heart, of course, is the is the Chicago Blackhawks. Certainly they were tremendously busy even before the deadline and right up obviously on deadline day. Looking at the Blackhawks, I know sometimes you look and when multiple parts are acquired, there are sometimes some concerns about how well those parts will fit. Although I will say they seem to fit a specific mold that Stan Bowman's looking for. There's obviously certainly a level of risk involved in terms of their futures and everything. But what were your overall views about what the Blackhawks did heading into the weekend?
Yeah, I think that of the teams that made significant trades, I thought that they had basically made the moves that were most needed for their team, with the exception of, you know, they didn't get a top four defenseman, but really who did? I mean, the Dallas Stars, you'd say, they might have got a guy that's going to be in their top four, but there just was not a market. You know, the Dan Hamhuis thing would have been a tough situation to try and fit him and also give up what a player like him would command in a trade. So I thought the top six need, if you can get a top six forward this time of year, and not just a top six forward, but a guy that has been with your team before, has played with their team before and understands, you know, the kind of what's going to be expected of him, that's a pretty big deal. And I think Andrew Ladd is better now than he was when he played with the Blackhawks the first time around, even though he's older. He got put in a role where he had to be a producer. Now he's in he's already been effective with Jonathan Toews. I mean, it's like no time has passed. Those two guys just have gotten right on the same page. And so that I thought was really effective. But I also like the depth moves, too, because, you know, when Marian Hossa went down and when Artemi Panarin was sick, you can see that they just did not have the depth at forward to kind of recover from that. And when you're in the playoffs, you're going to need to have depth. And we saw last year was kind of a next man up thing for them, and they were really thin on defense, and they had to really grind their defensemen into the ground. But now that they're doing that, kind of trying to overload at forward because they really couldn't do much with their defense this time around. So Dale Weiss, Tomas Fleischmann, I mean, they're kind of bit players, but they're also
no, they're good pickers.
Guys that, yeah, they are. And Fleischmann already scored a goal, you know. And the trade that intrigued me the most, though, I mean, obviously the Andrew Ladd was the big trade, and that was kind of the exciting trade for the whole hockey world to talk about. Getting Christian Ehrhoff and seeing if they could squeeze anything out of him, I thought was pretty smart, just because they got rid of Rob Scuderi, too, because he was not going to play for them. I don't think there was a situation that would have, I mean, if they were down to the last defenseman, they would have tried to, like, sign a college free agent and put him in the lineup, you know, before going to Rob Scuderi. So to get Christian Ehrhoff and just to see a low-risk guy, a cheap guy, you know, and he didn't look terrible in his first couple of games. I mean, you know, he's certainly not the guy that we saw when he was healthy with Pittsburgh last year. And you know, he's never been a real high-end guy. I mean, he did have some good years in his career. But now, you know, if you use him as your sixth defenseman, that's not a bad guy to have as your fifth.
We'll see. I mean, I'm not huge on him anymore, but in that role, maybe he'll be okay. I will tell you, though, the magic that Bowman pulled off is not trading Ryan Hartman. And obviously, I would think every team asked for him, and nobody was able to get him. So to me, that's pretty successful. Another interesting thing with the Blackhawks, and you'll probably take umbrage with this, I saw that Bleacher Report decided that they would rank all the organizations' prospects after the trading deadline, and they ranked the Blackhawks 30th. And I was thinking, look, I understand they're the defending Stanley Cup champs. That still doesn't mean they actually should be ranked 30th, because they shouldn't. They actually have some players down there. And I, again, I just sort of looked at that and said, I kind of wonder if you know who some of these players are. So I thought Bowman did good with just not getting rid of certain guys either.
Right, yeah, that was certainly key. I'm very high on Marco Dano still, even after all that. And they did trade him to Winnipeg. I think he's got an NHL future. I think he's going to be a good player. But I was not surprised to see him in the Andrew Ladd trade, because he didn't really fit with Joel Quenneville. He wasn't that kind of player.
No.
But Ryan Hartman obviously is. I think it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what they do with Nick Schmaltz. Do they sign him this year? Do they wait and let him stay in at North Dakota? He just scored a beautiful goal tonight in their game against Western Michigan. I happen to be watching. So they do have guys there. And the other thing,
man, John
too,
Hayden's getting close. I mean,
right,
they have some guys.
Yeah, but they've got guys that they don't even have under contract yet that are going to be there eventually, and they're going to kind of fill into those roles. And they've just re-signed Kyle Bond, who's not a top-end prospect, but he's a guy that's going to do the same thing that we've seen. They have so many guys on entry-level contracts, and that has been key. And then you also look, okay, nobody saw Artemi Panarin. A lot of people expected him to be good. Didn't expect him to be this good. And so he's a young guy that you know, if you don't have a prospect, it's not a big deal. I think, you know, Trevor Van Riemsdyk is a young guy still. He's an unrestricted free agent out of college hockey. I'm sure they will pick up one or two more college free agents this summer. They have the contract space to do it. And there are a few guys out there that I think have NHL futures that they will certainly go after, and they can point to this season saying, hey, we need you because you're cheap. You will play right away because you're cheap, and we think that you've got a chance to make our team. So you tell a kid that, hey, you can step right into a Stanley Cup contender, and that's going to be a pretty impressive sales pick. So I kind of get it, but I mean, there are certainly worse prospect pools out there right now.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe they don't have that high end guy. That's because they're all on the NHL roster right now, or they were, you know, there's Tavo and there's Panarin, and you know, those are the guys that are on the NHL roster, and Hartman and Schmaltz, those guys will come along and fill into those roles when they're ready. So I mean, I certainly wouldn't rank them 30th. I'd have to look and see the list, but I wouldn't be.
Once
I saw
them 30th, I stopped.
Yeah, that's a quick page turner there. So. Yeah.
Chris, speaking of prospect pool, certainly for the team that Russ and I obviously cover very on a regular basis, the Philadelphia Flyers were in a very interesting spot going into the trade deadline in the last few days right beforehand. They were kind of in between sort of almost a no man's land between whether or not they were going to be a buyer and a seller. They were a point out. Now they're 5 points out, but obviously still the race is still going on. You think, in your mind, Ron Hextall did the right thing by not making any moves at the deadline, or do you feel like they may have, you know, that may be a concern going down the stretch if they didn't get any reinforcements before then?
Yeah, I think he's made the absolute right decision. I think that he has come in and has brought a level of sensibility to that front office that has not been seen in a long time. And I think you look at what they've done in the draft, a conscious effort to build a prospect pool at a position where they have been terrible at developing and drafting. And it has cost them so much against their salary cap to try and continually buy defensemen. And so now you've got a loaded prospect pool, and you're seeing the fruits of that labor already with Shane Gostis there. You're going to see it later on with Provorov and you know, I'm not as high on Moran or Hag, but I like them both, and obviously Sanheim as well. So they've got so many pieces. You just let them continue to marinate. I also thought it was good. There was some talk about possibly trading a goaltender just because of the surplus position currently, and obviously there's also Anthony Stolarz, He's a very intriguing goalie prospect to me, and has been. He got drafted out of the North American League. So there are guys that are certainly building up a bit of a pool there. And I mean, when those lists used to come out, Philadelphia was usually right around 30th when it came to prospect ranking, and they've now built that. So I think you don't sacrifice any of that. You continue to draft. You continue to get guys that you're going to have on entry-level contracts, especially now that you've got Voracek. You know, his new contract coming up, and your salary cap is going to get a little bit tighter. You know, if they could have sold one of their veteran defensemen and just said, hey, you know, let's see if we can bring up another kid or let's see if we can do something else, maybe that would have worked. But, it was not a problem that they didn't sell, and it certainly wasn't a problem that they didn't buy, because it would have cost them something that they weren't willing to give up. And I think that Ron Hextall made the right move by just saying, nope. We're good. We'll see what happens with the rest this year. We've got bigger things ahead of us. Let's not ruin that. So I thought it was very sensible.
Yeah, I liked what a non-contender in Arizona did too. I mean, forgetting about Plotnikov, because I really don't think he's much of a player, but I really like Connor Blakely a lot, always have, and Kyle Wood's a very useful guy too for the future. And I thought for Bodker, for a guy that wasn't going to be coming back, and he clearly was not going to be coming back, they pulled in one of the best hauls, and Alex Tanguay too.
Yeah, it was, you know, Blakely was not going to sign with Colorado. I mean, they moved on from him from the second, pretty much the second he got to his first training camp. I mean, And what that there's another prospect pool that's got some concerns, though. Miko Rantanen is really interesting, and I think having a great year. But that was a mess. And then Wood is such an intriguing guy, you know, with the size and his production. You know, what does he turn into? And not only that, but the Coyotes needed some deep process. They have loaded up the forward, but there's not a ton on the back end where you're just like, oh, there, that guy is going to work. So now they've got a kid that maybe is kind of in that category. I don't know enough about him to really speak intelligently about him, but I know that, you know, that he's done some interesting things in his career, and it was a position of need in their prospect pool. And then they also get Tenge, and it just says, hey, you know what, we're not going to go out of our way at this point, really, to try and build some, a win-now team. But we've got a guy that can at least help us, and if we get close again into a wild card situation, which I don't think is going to happen, we've got some bodies, and that's good. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's a team where they didn't have to give, you know, there was no reason for Don Mahloney to go out there and try and swing for the fences and bring in somebody that was going to help now. That's another team where they've just built up their prospect pool to a point where they have an opportunity to really sensibly build a team again. And eventually they're going to be able to hand this team from Shane Doan to the young guys and roll with it. And it's going to have some growing pains, but they're in such a better position now because they won't have to rely on the free agent that they have so much trouble trying to attract or trying to swing a trade. So they just more have to focus on, you know, how do we get some more balance into our prospect system? Otherwise they're going to start running into the problem of the Edmonton Oilers, where we've got all sorts of forwards and we don't have a defenseman, but they obviously have the cornerstone already in Oliver Ekman Larson. So assuming they don't trade him for the first overall pick,
I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I don't think so either. And I thought it was such an interesting idea. I think it was Craig Custin presented that, and I was like, wow, that's a thinker. For them,
I don't think either team would do it, to be honest. I don't think
they may not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on who it was. I think if it was Edmonton, I think they'd at least consider it. So
they probably consider it, but in the end they probably wouldn't do it though.
Yeah. No, that'd be it's still intriguing, but yeah, I mean it's the same thing. But Arizona should not you don't get rid of a cornerstone defenseman like that. Even though it's Austin Matthews, I don't think you could do it.
Chris, I'll keep the next question pretty basic. How badly has Jonathan Drouin played his hand with the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Wow, yeah, that was one where I thought for sure by the end of Monday that he would be on a different team because I know I think this option was the last option Steve Yzerman was hoping for, but clearly he said, he stuck to his word. We will only make a deal that helps our team. And obviously there wasn't anything out there that he felt was going to help them. I thought one of the stipulations for making a trade would be if they got help, immediate help, that, you know, you, not only that, but you have to have immediate help and then a draft pick or a prospect or something like that to move a former number three pick. Because that is such a huge investment, and to have it go south so bad is great. Is totally unexpected. But yes, awfully played hand, continually played awfully. Not playing was the absolute worst decision he could make. And I was watching the Sportsnet coverage, and Corey Hirsch had some really salient points about a similar situation with himself. And you can't purposely sink your trade value and expect that your general manager is going to be able to do something with that.
I agree. Don't you think he's taking advice from his agent, though, Chris? I think his agent sort of set him on the wrong path here. I do.
I have a really hard time believing that Alan Walsh, who is controversial and is, you know, very boisterous and can really rub people the wrong way. He's been in this game long enough to know that sitting out was a terrible idea. Maybe he was, but I also think that this was a situation where the player was apparently irrevocably wronged by the organization and probably head coach John Cooper by not playing him however many minutes he wanted to be played or with whoever he wanted to be played. I can't see this being the kind of advice that a long-term veteran agent, even one as controversial as Alan Walsh, would sit down with his client and say, this is our course of action. I think the one thing that I'll say about Walsh, he stands by his client no matter what and does what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key factor. But I mean, and I have no inside knowledge. I don't have any idea
Me neither.
Of what the situation is, but I have such, he's too smart of a guy to have basically engineered this, because if he did, he should be fired.
Completely agree on that. Yeah, if that was true, again, you're right. In many ways, you'd look at this and you think, is it just, again, strong-willed personality of Drouin? But again, it also goes back to, granted, you are maybe you were the third overall pick in the draft, but you can't come in with sort of that chip of entitlement. It has that whiff of entitlement, and that really sort of, you know, creates a situation for other GMs to look at you and kind of side-eyed look, and they can acknowledge your talent, but at the same time, they kind of wonder about your personality and how mercurial you are.
Right, yeah, and it's just a complete lack of maturity, a complete lack of professionalism. And I am usually the kind of person that is going to side with a player over management and the team. But in this situation, I see no reason to blame John Cooper for playing him the way that he played him. You know, yes, he was productive. But there are things that you need to learn, and you cannot hand guys things. This is the National Hockey League; they cannot be handed something. Because it doesn't do that player any good if that's what you do, because he's got a career. You can't just think about year one and year two. You need to think about the fact that this is a guy under team control for, you know, at least 7 or 8 years, and that's the other thing about this whole situation. It appears that he's not going to have. You know, he's going to be a year further away from unrestricted free agency because of all of this. And that's
why I have a hard time believing that at his young age he decided this. That's the part that I think even if Walsh didn't want him to do this, then he should have been more emphatic about making sure he didn't walk away, because not playing was never going to be a good thing no matter what.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. It just lacks forward thought too. I mean, that's the other thing, which makes me feel like it's more of a player decision than it is an agent decision. Because I think if there's one thing about NHL agents, there are so many smart ones. They are always thinking 10 steps ahead. And that, you know, the fact that these players have to wait so long to get to unrestricted free agency now, that is something that a player of Drouin's caliber, you know, that puts him further away from his next contract where they can buy off mm-hmm. the free agent years as well. So that's where I feel like maybe this is more driven from the client than it is the agent. But who knows? I mean, like, that's the thing. It's all speculation on my part. They've been very quiet since the statements and everything else have come out. But, I mean, this situation does no one any good. It was, absolute worst case scenario for Steve Yzerman and for Jonathan Drouin.
Yeah. Now, what about the Anaheim Ducks? They literally went from being Stanley Cup contenders to sort of being nowhere to sort of getting it together. Then I feel like John Gibson came in and sort of saved the team. A lot of people don't even realize he could be a Calder candidate, and they don't really think mm-hmm. about that because he's played before, and then they get Brandon Peary for next to nothing because all of a sudden Florida just found him to be totally expendable, or the market was bad for him, and Jamie McGinn. I mean, now Anaheim looks a lot better. They could score a few goals. They're going to be dangerous.
Yep, they sure are. And the other thing about the deadline is all the rumors that swirled around the Ducks involved their young defensemen. It was Lindholm or it was Vatanen. And I'm thinking, what? You know, why would you want to deal those guys? I know that they're there's restricted free agency to worry about, and there's a few other things. But, you know, trying to get all those guys under contract at a reasonable rate. But that's one of the strengths of your team is that you have guys that they aren't quite there yet, but they're getting there. And they're very, you know, I think Lindholm in particular is a guy that's going to be a very important investment for them for a long time. So there's that. And then to get the forward depth, and not just forward depth, guys that are scoring goals this year. I mean, Jamie McGinn is scoring goals on a real bad team when it comes to goal scoring. Brandon Peary has, you know, that's pretty much all he does, really, is score goals. And he's the kind of guy that you can kind of deploy in certain situations. And, you know, like that's – you got – Silverberg has not been scoring a lot. So, you know, you have to supplement the guys that you have. And with Chris Stewart out and for who knows how long, you know, they need that forward depth. I thought – you know, Bob Murray, you know, he's won the award, the GM of the Year award, so he gets enough credit. But the salary cap gymnastics that he's done on a team where it seems like it's a self-cap team, he's managed to keep them pretty well under the salary cap, and that's allowed him to make those kind of deals. It's going to get a little more challenging this summer when they have all the restricted free agents come up, but that's a team now where they're going for not just to me, they're not going just for the playoffs. They're going for their division title, and they're loaded back up and starting to look like the Stanley Cup contender again that we all thought they were. I mean, they were my Western Conference picks going back to the summer, and I was sweating out. I had them in the Lightning, and I'm like, oh man, this is going to be a rough year for predictions for me. But now all of a sudden, both of those teams are on fire.
Chris, one last question from my end in terms of some of the moves, obviously, that the Maple Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes made here, obviously, at the deadline. In terms of, you know, the assets that they picked up, I'm looking at Carolina's, you know, 2016 draft, and it's basically first three rounds are multiple picks. Their fifth round, they have three fifth-round picks. I mean, Carolina really sort of set themselves up well. I would say Carolina looks like they set themselves well up for the future, also getting a player I really like in Valentin Zajkov in the trading for Chris Versteeg.
Yeah, that I thought that was another thing. Ron Francis, a very similar situation to Ron Hextall, where they were close but not really. And not only that, but they're a team that should know that if they got into the playoffs, it's probably over after the first round. So, you know, I thought to get what he could out of the guys that he had was huge, and I was shocked to see Zajkov go that way, and just I was shocked to see him involved. He hasn't had a great year in the American League.
But he's young.
Had some significant, yeah, exactly. I mean, guys at that age tend not to score at a high level, but he's still got some potential. And then, the draft pick haul for both Carolina and Toronto. It is so important because it gives you the one thing multiple draft picks does, it gives you options. You can hang on to them and draft players. You can package them for other deals. I think we're going to probably see Toronto package theirs. I don't think they'll move up. They'll probably have guys they like in the second round, just like they did last year, and stay, stay right in that, you know, just picking off those prospects or they'll trade them for an actual roster player. So that's what I like about having multiple draft picks, because you can start packaging them and you can use them. And those teams in their situation, that's what they have to do. Now Toronto is kind of doing this studs up rebuild. You know, they've got their that's where I think that this is going to be really challenging, because they drafted well last year. I really liked their draft last season, and I think that they've got obviously the right guy doing it. And Mark Hunter, and that's going to be a huge deal for them, having a guy with such this just so in tune to junior hockey, and obviously Kyle Dubas as well. So that helps them. But what I'm going to be interested to see is, you know, the Stamkos thing. How does that all play out? Is there another unrestricted free agent out there that they can bring in? Because obviously, how long is Mike Babcock going to be okay with losing?
Hang on, hold that thought one sec, Chris. Hold the thought one sec. I got to let people know that show's going to end in 30 seconds. You can catch us the last little minute or two on the other end. Just come back and listen. But go ahead. You can finish it out.
Yes. Sorry about that, everybody.
That's all right.
I just wonder how long Mike Babcock is going to be patient enough. I think that, you know, this is a tough season already for him, but he's handled it pretty well. And now he's got to, you know, play those young guys and make that all work. But clearly Toronto is already on the path. Carolina has the guys. They have, you know, they're starting to build their defense, but I still don't feel like they have that prospect or that young player that's going to put them over the top. You know, you build around Justin Falk, but who do you build around in net? Who do you build around up front? You know, who are the guys, you know, who are those cornerstone pieces? Is, you know, because Elias Lindholm was a high draft pick. Not necessarily the kind, like, he'll be a good player, but he's not necessarily the kind of guy that's
going to build your team around. Yeah, he's not a stone cold scorer or anything.
Right. So now it's just a matter for Ron Francis, it's going to be a matter of, you know, drafting, you know, if they end up finishing, getting a high draft pick, you know, getting the right players at the right position.
The good news for them is they have Nedeljkovic, they've got Allstuller.
Right.
So I think they've got goaltending. I think they're actually good there.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, I mean, I think those guys are certainly going to come in and they'll be, you know, we're going to learn a lot more about them in these coming years here. And they'll have to move on from Cam Ward finally. You know, what's going to happen with Jeff Skinner? There's a lot of different things that can happen with that team. But that's the difference between them and Toronto right now. Toronto recognized it early enough and they started to rebuild, you know, parts of last season and into this season. And now that's what they have to do next for Carolina. They have to start figuring out where do they fill those gaps, because, I mean, that's a team that's been running in place in the wrong direction. You know, it's just sitting and low in the standings. And I'm still kind of shocked with, you know, they've had bad luck too, the whole Skinner injuries and all that stuff. But we'll see. I just think that I'm very, very, very interested to see how Toronto does this, because I know that this is the plan. It's very clear. And I'm excited to see how they build a team out of what they've just done.
Me too. Thanks so much, Chris Peters. Everybody check him out at Chris Peters on Twitter. We appreciate the time. Always a breath of fresh air. And that's going to end it. We're overtime. We're out.
Yes, we're out. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Cappuccino, please.
Seconds ago, you were just mere coffee beans. And now look at you, McCafe Cappuccino. You will warm the hands of the chilly and kickstart the days of the busy. Go on, my frothy one. The world is yours.
Freshly ground McCafe Cappuccino from McDonald's. We make breakfast.